Geraint Wyn Davies is a Welsh-Canadian actor who has starred in numerous plays, movies, and television shows since his debut in 1977. We met Mr. Davies in September of 2023 and completely lost our minds. After we came to, we had one goal in mind: watch everything he has ever been in so that next time we're ready. How has this man made a career out of making out on screen? Will this be enough to help us make it through the next meeting, still conscious? This isn't a podcast. It's an inoculation. Hi, I'm Rachel.
And I'm Meg. And this is Gair Can Get It. This week, more goddamn puppets. But it's fine. It's fine. They're good puppets this time. We're going to get through this together. But like, spoiler alert, there is another goddamn puppet who will fight Gair in a battle of wits, which Gair may not win, frankly.
If they gave awards for makeouts on screen or stage, this guy would get a lifetime achievement. He'll find any excuse to get right to second face. You honestly wouldn't believe it. Dissecting each and every kiss with tongue, there's only one conclusion to come to. It's that Gair can get it. Gair can get it.
Are they good puppets, or is it just actually a puppet and not like a secret actual character who is played by a puppet?
I'm just glad that there weren't any more blowjobs, okay? Like, I'm gonna take the gifts that Gair gives us when he gives them to us, okay? And this week nobody lifted up a little apron and blew a teddy bear. So I'm like, this is fine, I can handle this.
Thank you, universe, for this gift you have given us this day.
Blessed be.
But it giveth and it taketh, because we have to deal with that fucking contact the entire episode. The blue-eyed contact.
I do hate. Like, as a person who I think you will know, I am very fine with freaky contact lenses. I am A+ okay with a freaky contact lens. I do not like the contact lens that they – I was going to say lenses, but no, lens, singular yeah, lens singular. That they use on the actor who plays Harcourt – Grimsby. I feel like they changed how they say his last name. But yeah, it is such a weird color. So like, we'll get there and like, we'll get there. But like, these fucking contact lenses. Yeah, I can deal with the puppet. I can't deal with the weird jacked up milky blue eye. I just don't like it. So this week we'll be discussing two episodes of Murdoch Mysteries. So we're going to talk about season one, episode 9, Belly Speaker. It's from 2008. And then very, 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 very briefly, so briefly, you could just probably skip it, we're going to talk about season 6, episode 4, A Study in Sherlock. It's from 2013. And it's a thing that exists. It's fine. But before we start, I have, what do you call it? Like a self-correction? I don't know. I got real anal retentive and looked stuff up, and I found out that we were wrong, and now I feel the need to like say that recorded forever for posterity. So, okay. So last time we were discussing how it just seemed weird that Inspector Thomas Brackenreed was talking to Sir Arthur Conan Doyle about like, oh, I have a really cool idea for a Sherlock Holmes story involving a dog, even though Sherlock Holmes, the character, has just been killed off. And we were like, that seems weird because I bet that story came first. So I Googled it. Apparently, I don't know how you know what year each episode is supposed to be in Murdoch Mysteries. I don't know if like maybe like in season one, episode one, they like say the year and like all of season one is the same year, or if we just missed it, it's like on a newspaper somewhere. But they established the year is like it's like the late 1890s. When I Googled it, the year that the story takes place is after the I think it's called The Final Problem or The Final – yeah, I think The Final Problem. The Sherlock Holmes story where Sherlock Holmes dies, that had just – like that would have just come out like the year before. And then the first story after Sherlock Holmes comes back from the dead is in fact The Hounds of the Baskervilles. So like
– oh.
Chronologically, like I say, I don't know how we know what year this episode is supposed to be, because I don't remember anybody saying it's 1890 whatever. But apparently Hounds of the Baskervilles is after the death. What they did get wrong, though, is that apparently Sir Arthur Conan Doyle, he does, obviously, like everyone knows, he gets really into spiritualism. that doesn't happen until around right after World War One, and it apparently coincides with, but I guess people are saying was not caused by like everyone he knew basically dying either like in the war or like in, from causes related to the war. But so yeah. All that stuff, and him, I guess he actually did come to Toronto two separate times. And he does do these lectures, like these talks about spiritualism. All this stuff does happen, but it happens like 20 years after the setting of the episode. So like they got the story time right, but not his travel time right, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
So then I think they are suggesting that Sherlock Holmes, that Sir Arthur Conan Doyle like steals the story from dumbass Inspector Brackenreed, which... I still have a problem. Like at the end of the day, I still have a problem with it, but like, whatever, it's a cute show. It's going to do what it's going to do. Anyways,
yeah.
I don't know the Sherlock Holmes timeline. And now I sort of do a little bit. So good for us. Anyways, doesn't fucking matter. Who gives a shit, but I'm anal retentive. And so it's a thing I learned. So I had to.
Somebody gives a shit, Meg. And they were yelling at that episode. No, that is not how that goes. And I'm like, I think it's the first one. And they're like, no, it's not. It comes after when he dies and then Moriarty. And then, yeah, somebody cares.
Well, and like, I mean, usually, I'll be honest, like usually when I'm editing, that's where I'm like, I'm the one yelling that at me. I'm like, you fucking moron. That's called admission of a party opponent. That's what that exception is when you're in court and you're saying what the defendant said. That's what that, like I'm like, no one gives a shit. Nobody cares except for me hearing myself be a moron and then going like, go to correct myself to myself while I have to listen to it 75 times to edit it. Like, it's only for my own mental illness. But now when I listen to this later, I will have outsmarted the mental illness and it'll be okay is what I'm telling myself.
Well, good. Yeah, I'm glad you found the solution.
That's how that works. Yeah, it's not therapy or meds. It's being pedantic. That's how you fix mental illness.
Oh, my God. Yeah, you're right. I mean, that's the entire millennial philosophy. So
it is known. It is known.
Thank you for describing podcasts as a whole.
Being pedantic and correcting yourself over and over again in an attempt to fix mental illness.
Yes.
What could be mentally ill about this podcast series that we have where we discuss obscure roles of a 90s heartthrob, a 90s heartthrob in all of his non-heartthrob roles? Well, I think he is a heartthrob in Black Harbor. I think that's, yeah. I think his role in that is meant to be like half like jealous.
An Airwolf.
Husband or ex-husband, I think. Is he supposed to be like a hottie in Airwolf?
Yeah.
Are there love triangles and stuff in Airwolf?
He's Gare. Does he play any other type of role?
That's true. That's fair. I'm so sorry.
No. You're like, is he a heartthrob in that? Fucking yes. Of course he's a heartthrob in that.
No. I meant to the other characters. Obviously to us.
Oh, okay. Yes. No, I think he is.
Yeah, no, to us in everything. I mean, in this he's a portly middle-aged man fighting a puppet, and I'm still like, oh.
Sir.
It's what I'm into.
That big mustache.
All my personal fantasies are coming true. Oh, that fucking puppet. Why is it always puppets? I'm so over puppets. Like, I just, like, again, like, thank you. Thank you for not doing, like, a Murdoch Mysteries After Dark where the puppet fucks. Like, thank you so much.
Thank God for small miracles. It's a way more annoying puppet somehow than Buttons. I didn't think it was possible, but here we are.
You know what it is? I feel like, okay, so I feel like Buttons is just allowed to be a character. Like, he's a character that's, like, creepy because he's a stuffed teddy bear, and he's creepy because he's, like, lascivious, and it's weird to have that juxtaposition of, like, super horny and gross and amoral, but, like, in sort of a cute-ish form, but the form is also like physically like dirty and tattered. Like there's like a lot of weird stuff going on there, but he's a character. But I feel like all ventriloquist dummies tend to be the same character. Like they're all like clones of like the dummy, like the you are dummy, like the, like I feel like they're all like little like clippings of that. And that character is both physically creepy and upsetting to look at. And so they all have like the exact same like super round dummy head with the painted on hair and the like the little lines going down their their jaw for their little mouthpiece to move. And like, so they all like look the same, which is upsetting. And they all have that same super fucking annoying, hacky, like vaudeville double team personality, only instead of it being like two human men, one of us is made out of wood, yuck, yuck. And you're just like, nope, I fucking, no. I would hate you if you were a real boy, and I hate you now.
And we get so much of it. I mean, our first introduction to him is when he's like, he's still here. He's still here. And you're like, what the shit is happening? It's unnecessarily convoluted.
But like even there's like convoluted where like if you explain it to me, I can go, oh, okay, I see. Now I understand because you understand. Now I understand like why they went the way they did. I feel like at the end of this, I'm still like, I don't know. I don't know.
Okay. Yeah, at least there were a lot of hot men and some really gross teeth and a really dumb dummy. And then we're done.
God. Yeah. Gare saves this episode for me in a way that like, he's in other things where I'm like, oh, this is fine. And then he makes it better. This, I'm just like, everything's terrible. But when you come on screen, it's magic. And I love it so much. And then back to terrible when you're on screen. So why don't we actually like, I don't know, fucking discuss the episode, what happens?
I mean, if you wanna.
I don't really want. I mean, I want a little bit. Okay. For the fans. The fans expect it. And we have at least.
We do.
We have at least two.
Maybe three.
I'm gonna
possibly four.
Let's not get ahead of ourselves. I'm sure I can't.
Could be as many as five. Let's see, there's Gare. Gare's two kids.
Shut up. By fans, you mean the people who are drafting restraining orders against us?
Hey, negative attention is still attention.
Yeah. I mean, look, you have to sign your name on any kind of a petition for a motion before the court. And what is an autograph if not just a signature?
It worked for J.K. Rowling. That's why Harry Potter's so popular.
What?
Don't you remember that her books got banned and there were people picketing her books?
Vaguely. Because of witchcraft and shit and Jesus.
And they took them out of schools and, yep.
Well, now she's on the side of the religious right, so good for her. Well, although I guess she's on her like own third side, which is...
Yeah, she invented a whole new way to hate people. So congratulations.
I just, like, I know that this is, like, not the forum for that. I just, like, can't cis women and trans women, can't we just all be women who support each other? And, like, just because different women have had different experiences doesn't mean that we're, like, not on the same side of women. Like, is that, right. Why is that? I don't know. That doesn't seem like it's that hard. But again, I'm real simple. I can't even understand the puppet episode of Murdoch Mysteries. So it may be that there are nuances to the discussion of gender that J.K. Rowling gets and that I just do not. But, you know, I does the best I can with the brain I got.
Womp, womp. I await enlightenment in that regard.
To be as enlightened as J.K. Rowling? Well, we can
only hope. That's one way to phrase it. Anyway, back to the puppet episode.
Oh, my God. Okay. So it begins.
A man throws up and dies.
Yeah, oh God, it's so gross. Like this show, it's like they can't decide whether they're going to be super inoffensive or if they're like, well, we have an extra $10 in the budget. Why don't we just spend it on realistic human barf? And I'm like, why? What you could have bought lunch for the cast. That's you could have used your $10 to buy Timbits. Like, why did you choose
that? We pick up graphically to collect. They used a lot of gelatin in that like sample. Whatever that is.
You're gonna make me audibly puke on this podcast. Okay, so we start. Okay, so Murdoch is investigating the murder of Roderick. And like I said, his last name is either Grimsby or Grimesby. And everyone puts their own little flair on it. So I don't know how I'm going to pronounce it. Probably different every time. It's fine.
Yeah, we'll just mix it up. Make it authentic. Yeah.
This show. So he is dead in his apartment. We find out that he has really garbage quality varnish in his stomach. And he has alcohol in his stomach, like regular drinking alcohol in his stomach. And also, like you said, he has vomit on his mouth and on the floor. And they really like, props guy, you did a good job. I wish you had not. But like you did a good job. So but he's on the floor. So we find out. So the guy that found him on the floor was his neighbor, and his neighbor was there because he was about to beat the shit out of him and then shows up and the guy's already dead and he's like, well, that, you know, that did my job for me. Yeah. because, so the neighbor was going to beat the shit out of him because Dead Roderick was fucking his neighbor's wife. And like, they could have left it there. I feel like they could have even not cast the wife. They could have just had him come in and be like, he was fucking my wife. And then like, oh, he's a suspect. And then he's like, not a suspect. And we all just like move on.
Yeah.
No, fucking no. So the show has to give us really graphic barf. And then it has to give us creepy neighbor who I think he has bad teeth too, doesn't he? I feel like we get to see a close-up of him with the bad teeth.
Everyone has bad teeth except Murdoch.
Except Yannick, yeah. Goyle. Well, and Gare.
Yeah. And Gare.
Pearly whites. Beautiful, perfect pearly whites.
Fine. But, and everyone else, tobacco teeth.
What I don't get, though, is like we've seen other episodes and like they don't do this in every single episode as a matter of course. Like they're not just like trying to differentiate William Murdoch has beautiful, beautiful, beautiful teeth and everyone else has like hobo teeth. No, that most episodes, everyone has regular teeth. Just for some reason in this episode, I guess they, like you said, they had like an extra bucket of like painted on tobacco color and they were like, let's go wild. And every character in this has the fucking worst, like not even just like I wish my teeth could be whiter. Like not, no. They wanted this to be like legible, like across the room. If you're watching this from like a TV in like a hospital room, like a little tiny mounted television across. So like it is, everyone has teeth like shit brown. And I was like, oh no. Oh, why?
And there's
why?
So many close-ups too.
So you're many like close-ups. Looking
directly at everybody's teeth the entire time. And it's just like, I can't focus on the story because you have made the choice to give everybody bad teeth. And like gross skin, like they have not like broken out skin, but like flaky, like they haven't bathed. Like everyone looks dirty. Gross teeth. Because we like zoom in on everybody's mouth. And then everybody has like a patina. Like nasty, all of them. They're all sweaty. They're like sweaty and gross and flaky. And I'm like, I get it. They're supposed to be lower income. Like I get it. There's other ways to shorthand that for me besides, look, guys, bad teeth.
Feel physically ill. It did sort of remind me of Hush, Little Baby, where they're like, you know who people don't like? The pores. Let's really ramp that up.
Let's like, lean in. Can we lean in? Let's make a note. I want to lean in. So let's do bad teeth. You want to do bad teeth? Let's do bad teeth.
Well, we still have an extra $5 in the budget. What if in addition to bad teeth, we just covered them in fucking garbage and slime? And then we did extreme close-ups, like in Wayne's World, like, wow, like just like all the way in close-ups.
It's yes. Too much. Oh, it's so much.
And like, you're right. Like they really like, I feel like I'm self-conscious about my teeth. So like if I smile, like I'm not smiling with teeth generally. And I'm like, I know that like I will subconsciously like not open my mouth like as big as maybe I could. These people, I think, were given the opposite instruction of like, you got brown teeth. We want to get our money's worth. Like flash them as much as you possibly can at the camera.
Yeah. I can only imagine they could feel it. You know, like when you haven't brushed your teeth in a little bit and you get that like fur feeling and you can like feel it on the inside of your lip. And so you're like moving your lips weird because you can feel it.
Yeah. Yeah. No, like on Forever Night when they hold their lips a little funny when they've got the vampire fangs in.
Yeah. And they're just trying to like, God bless. It's gotta be hard. That's a lot. And then you got to act cool, but you're also like, don't do weird things with your mouth and then you make duck lips and then here we are.
Yeah. Well, and like, not to get too off topic, but like when they've got them in and you can like see them like pushing against the lip a little bit and they're like trying to not. They're like, no, this is normal. You don't know I have fangs. And I'm like, sir.
I do. It's fine.
your mouth isn't normally like protruding like up. Like, I don't, like something is wrong inside your mouth area. Oh, yeah. No, but I mean, it's got to be worse for them on Forever Night because, like you said, they have to like be cool or menacing. And here they're just like, I feel gross. I have to be gross. I'm going to use this. I'm a method actor.
Like, cool. I'll be gross. And the guy who plays, is it Harcourt?
Yes, the son.
He does a really good job because he's gross, and I believe he's gross, and I believe I like he's punchable, and I believe he's punchable. Like the whole time, I'm like, "You're doing a really good job making me hate you right now."
I feel bad because the whole time I was watching him, I was like, "I bet outside of this, you are very handsome," and I bet that like I would watch you. I had like the opposite reaction to you, although like, yes, they painted his teeth like a caramel color, which not a fan. But like, I was like, oh, you are a really good actor. You're very effective in this role. And I can see how you could be like the lead character in something. Like I can see how you would be able to do, like you were compelling to watch. I want to watch more of you. I don't want to see you with that weird fucked up blue eye. So like never, ever, ever, goddamn ever do that again. But like, I would watch things that you were in. Like I enjoyed you. I don't know. But because we had talked earlier, like why didn't they pick an actor that like had two blue eyes and you give him one brown contact and that would have looked more normal? But like this actor is very good. I can see why they picked him. I just like could they have like picked some other color for the contact? Like I bet you could have gotten like a green eyed contact that looked sort of normal, or you could have, I don't know, given him like a black contact, or given like something that would not have been like, or like there's got to be like a normal blue contact lens somewhere in all of Toronto that's not like that weird turquoise color that no human person has ever had on their face. Like I just
we'll look at there. Yeah, even pretend it was, natural.
Yeah, it was just, it was so weird. And it was like the brown teeth where it's like, I'm not even focusing on the words coming out of your mouth. I'm just like, what the fuck is happening with your eye? I want to like poke it. I just want to be like, be less, be less. But okay. All right. So we find dead guy in the ground. We know that neighbor was mad at him because he was fucking neighbor's wife. We briefly meet neighbor's wife, who is horrible. She is the fucking worst. I want to spray her with a hose. I want her
horribly
to go away.
Amazing. She's hysterical. I liked her character.
I mean, she was effective in her role.
Yeah. She's like, I don't know. I fucked him. I don't know what to tell you. Like, I wasn't there for conversation. I was there for one thing. Yeah. And then I like the part where she's like, she's implying that her reason she is doing that is because her husband's not taking care of her, like sexually taking care of her. She's like, the only reason I was flying my flag was because of his feminine sensibilities to start with. Like, and then, I liked the, if the lovin's top shelf, you don't ask a lot of questions. You know what I mean? And Murdoch's like, I'm going to have to disinfect that chair, aren't I?
I could see the autism happening on Murdoch's face while she was talking.
And like the top button of her shirt's undone. Like, whoopsies, look at that. I seem to have forgotten a button. Mister, looks like you're wearing guyliner. Not mad at the guyliner eyes.
he has beautiful eyes, which are even more beautiful when he's looking horrified and upset and disgusted. Which I was right there with you, sir. I was right there. I'm bummed out anytime we have a character that's gross separate from being like also overly sexual, because then those two circles overlap and it sort of feels like, are you saying they're gross because they're overly sexual? Like let them be super gross. Or like, let them be sexual and we don't like judge their sexuality. But instead you were like, what if we kill two birds with one stone and we make her just the most disgusting bog monster? And also like, she needs to get laid and she's going to go wherever she can to get it. And it's sort of like, it's too easy to let those circles overlap. It's too easy to let to conflate those things. And it bums me out a little bit because like, the show is so good with having a main character that's like you said, or like we said in the last episode, that's clearly coded as like autistic. Like, why can't you also be open to characters that are sexual, are not like ashamed of that as a part of themselves, and also like the audience is not grossed out by them? Like, why?
It's probably supposed to be a reflection of the times.
Yeah, but like I feel like if you were going to have a reflection of the times, I'm sure they wouldn't have the word like autistic for Murdoch, but I feel like they could react to him in like a way that would be very uncomfortable for like a modern audience to watch. Like they could be like,
yeah.
Yeah. Or maybe he would be like locked up in an asylum. I don't know. Like, I mean, it would be, I don't know. It just feels like
his brand, his particular vintage is useful. Like it makes him a good detective.
Yeah. That's true enough. Yeah. Until he's not useful. And then like at that point, I don't know. Right. I don't know. I just, it's like, I think maybe
it might be why we start off the jump with the Sherlock Holmes comparisons. Because Arthur Conan Doyle, Gare is in this from season one, episode four. like he immediately sets up the like this guy is like Sherlock Holmes tone.
Yeah.
Or Sherlock is very intense and what one might consider almost autistic coded now, where he's like extremely focused on one. But
wasn't he like
thing.
Focused because he's a cokehead? Like, isn't that why Sherlock Holmes?
He was self-medicating. Yes. I would call that self-medicating. He doesn't take care of his own. He doesn't do any of his own personal care. He yeah. only does like detective work.
Yeah. But like, that also seems like, I don't know, kind of like, is that meant to be like a hyper-focus because of mental illness? Or is that just, I'm rich enough that I can afford to like, I don't need to, you'll take care of me. I don't need to worry. About
these were one and the same. If you were poor and autistic, you ended up in the asylum. If you were rich and autistic, you got to be Sherlock Holmes.
You got help. Yeah.
You got help. And cocaine.
Well, I like, it's one of those things where like, anytime we make a modern program about a different time period, it's just interesting to me, like, though the ways that we approach social issues, because like you could have the characters be very, very modern, right? Or you could have yeah. like some characters have like a modern point of view and some characters have sort of like an old-fashioned point of view and like show them interacting with each other. Because like surely there have always been people at like different times in history that have like that are more like forward thinking than everyone else, right? So like it wouldn't right. be totally crazy to have someone who's like more modern thinking. Or you could have every character be like the fucking worst. Like, and so it's interesting to see like when the show shows us like super gross horny neighbor lady, super gross and also super horny neighbor lady, like are you doing that just because like it's you think it's funny and you're like not thinking about it, which I think is exactly the correct answer for like exactly yes. what's going yeah. on. I don't know. It's just sort of like you, it's a choice that like you made. And like, I don't know whether it was the right choice, the wrong choice. It was a fucking gross to watch choice. But like, I hate when it just seems like such an easy poke down, like such an easy jab.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
And also, like I said, I don't want to see her brown fucking teeth and her talking about blowing yeah. a guy with her brown teeth is just, I don't need to, the visual.
Nope.
No. Mm-hmm. Anyways. She's gross and she goes away. And like you said, she's like, I wasn't there for talking. I don't know. Sometimes he mentioned a guy named Mycroft and would cry and seemed like he felt bad about it. But like, then I would fuck him till the tears went away. And I was like, cool, lady. Cool. You seem fun. Go away forever. And she does. So anyways, so we end up finding out that both mistress and husband of mistress, both of them have an alibi for the time when they think the guy was killed. So like I said, they get crossed off the list and they fuck off and we don't care. So we find Grimsby's 20-something adult weirdo son, Harcourt, and he's in the wardrobe, the wooden wardrobe, in the same room where Roderick Grimsby's body is found. And he's not in there alone, because that would be rough enough. But no, because God hates us. We get a fucking puppet.
He's in there with the fucking puppet.
And like you said, the puppet is – what is the puppet saying? Like, he's in here?
He's still here. He's still here.
God. Which, like,
he's still here.
I just, like, so based on what we learned at the end of the episode, I'm like, why wouldn't you have just killed the guy and then just absconded? Do you know what I mean? Like
yeah.
Just, yeah. Like, there was already the neighbor that was, like, a good, like, patsy to take the fall for you. And if you, like, there was nothing to suggest at this point that like your adult son killed you. Like I don't think at any point does anyone say like, oh, the adult son hated him and they got into fights all the time. And he was like, I'm going to murder you, old man. Like there's like nothing. There's not like dummy fingerprints on the guy's body. Like there's like what? Like where do you?
Yeah, it's the 1890s. If they didn't see you committing the crime, they pretty much couldn't catch yeah. you.
You were good.
You were good home free. Go. He could go, but, and they'd be like, well, he died from varnish. And he'd be like, not my varnish. And they would check, and they're like, shit, not his varnish. And then they would have nothing.
Even them checking the varnish, I was like, oh, so modern. Look at you guys. Look at you with your scientific bottles of like, varnish.
Pink dye, pink dye, pink dye, black dye. Oh, that one's different. And I was like, oh, okay, sure.
I love science on TV because it's simple for science. Me to understand. The color is wrong. Oh, the color is wrong. Yeah.
Oh, no, it's wrong. Oh, no, it's not the same.
I have the same understanding of, as like a six-year-old on like for science. So I like when they're like, the purple is the bad one. I'm like, purple's the bad one. Okay, purple's the bad one. Thank you, guys. Yeah, so like it doesn't, like already I'm like, I don't get it. It doesn't make sense. But so adult son Harcourt and with his creepy puppet doll named Mycroft, they're sitting in the wardrobe. Nobody knows that they're there until they fucking announce themselves with puppet voice. And then everyone opens up the doors and they see creepy sitting there with his creepy doll. And we find out that dead Roderick and living son Harcourt and not ever alive doll Mycroft all have heterochromia. So they have one blue eye, one brown eye. And I think on the dad, it's like, it doesn't matter. Like their eyes are not the same. Like they don't all have like one blue left eye and one brown right eye. Like I think it's reversed on some of them, but they all have one blue, one brown. As we said earlier, for some fucking reason, the blue eye they put on the poor actor, this poor man who plays Harcourt, is the worst fucking blue contact lens any of us have ever seen in our entire life. It is a color blue that like you had to specially order one to be so wrong. Like no one else has ever wanted a blue eye. It is the wrongest color of blue. I don't know how to explain how it's wrong as a color. Like no, it's a color that shouldn't exist and I hate it. It is the ugliest blue. It is the worst blue. It's a mean blue. If this blue were a person, it would kick puppies. It is bad. It is not a good color and I don't like it. And it makes me personally upset that anyone picked it.
I couldn't tell.
It just like deeply, you know, when like something just like viscerally disturbs you and you can't even really explain why it viscerally, like it makes you upset. That's how I feel about this color.
Yes. No, I get you. That's how I feel about this puppet and its blue eye.
Oh, fucking. But again, nobody blows it. And so thank you, Murdoch Mysteries. Thank you. We all learn from Puppets Who Kill, at least a little bit. So, okay. So Harcourt, they find him in the cupboard. He's like, hello, I killed my dad. He just confesses right the fuck right away. And like, I feel like, again, in like the actual 1890s, they would have been like, well, we're all done.
Yeah. Good job, us.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Donezo. But no, Murdoch is like using his, I'm just going to say his autism powers, because that basically appears to be how he solves every crime. He's like, no. He's like using his neurodivergence, which like, I feel like they play it as like no one else gives a shit. And he's like just neurodivergent enough to be like, what if the murders made sense? And everyone's like, ah, that's crazy, Murdoch. Like, you're living in the clouds, man. And he's like, no. What if you have to put the pieces together? Hear me out. You have to follow the pieces and they have to make sense to explain how the murder happened. And they're all like, what? They're like, brains are exploding. So he's like, this guy keeps confessing to the murder, but he keeps getting all the details wrong. Uh-oh, like, I want to figure out what's going on here. So his boss, Brackenreed, why can I never say his name right? Brackenreed is like, all right, I mean, whatever. There's a puppet. This is interesting. Investigate a little bit, I guess. So we end up finding out that the dead guy was a jerk. And it's like, well, we got that from how someone put varnish down his fucking throat till he vomited. I figured he probably wasn't a nice guy, but like, thanks for specifying that, Murdoch Mysteries, that he was a jerk, that he drove his wife to suicide. Because again, I don't know why, like, suicide is just, like, such an easy shorthand for all of these shows. Like, they just
– yeah.
I don't know. They just – like, they toss it out like it's candy and it loses all meaning.
Like, shit's fucked up. You can tell because everybody either wants to commit suicide, did commit suicide. That's how you know the situation is serious.
Yeah. Like, it's just, like, a real easy shorthand. So, like – I don't know. He's not very nice. What can we say about him? Like, give a specific example? No. Just say he made a lady kill herself. All right. Like, here we go. So,
yeah, fine.
He was a jerk. He drove his wife to suicide. And we find out that he had two sons. They were twins and they both had heterochromia, which like, I thought heterochromia was like recessive. So if like he had it and both of his twin sons had it, like, doesn't that mean that the wife like would have had to have had it? Like, or like she also had the recessive gene somehow? Like, it just seems like,
is it on the X?
I don't know.
She would have had to have it.
Like, I don't know enough science, but I just feel like if it's recessive, it's hard to pass on. And if you have like, do you know what I mean? Like, I don't know.
If it's recessive, it's hard to pass on to girls because you get two copies of the X. So you'd have to have two recessive copies to be able to express it. But she could have been a carrier. If she was not a carrier, if she actually had it, that would explain why all of her sons have it, because she gives them the X the yeah. dad gives the why. So the dad would actually not be the one to transfer that.
Right. Yeah. And we don't actually know anything about the mom. I think she's in the family portrait, but I don't remember them saying anything about her eye
focusing
color.
Focusing on it. Yeah.
Yeah.
I don't remember.
It seemed weird to me that, like, I don't know. Is it more likely that, like, I mean, I guess if you have, like, twins and they're, what do you call it? They're identical twins, then I guess they would both have, right? It's identical twins where you have one egg and it splits in half. So, like, if the recessive genes are there, then they both would.
Then they would both have it because they would be genetically identical. If they were identical twins, yeah. they'd have the same
DNA. So then
DNA.
It makes sense yeah. that they both have it, but only if the egg that made them had it, or like the egg and sperm combo that made them had it. So like, yeah, wouldn't both parents have to have the recessive gene for it to be expressed in the kids?
Not for a boy, because you only get one X. That's why it's so easy. It's so much easier for boys to have recessive traits. That's why all the Russian royalty babies had hemophilia. Well, the one where you bleed and bleed and bleed. You don't clot.
Yeah.
Yeah. Because it went. Because
it came from,
like,
the mother.
The Y is like significantly smaller than the X. It does not carry as much genetic material as the X does. And so women can be carriers because we get two X's, but men can't because they only get one.
So really, this episode would have made more sense if, like, the mom was a heterochromia jerk who then got killed with Varnish.
Yeah, but yeah.
Who do we write our letters to? I guess is what I'm asking.
I mean, I'm pretty sure. I can't remember what all the Y carries, but it's not as much as the X.
I want to keep talking uninformedly about science until some science bro, like, wakes up in the middle of the night with, like, an anger erection and then feels compelled to listen.
I think this feels like our niche. In fact, the Y is really cool because it passes completely unchanged because it doesn't get combined with anything. So you can track the Y so much farther back than X's.
I didn't know that. Like, I remember reading about, like, mitochondrial Eve, that we could, like, we could trace the X's and stuff all the way back to her.
Yeah. But no, the Y, you can, like, you can track the path of a Y chromosome for, like, millennia because it passes unchanged from male to male.
Huh. That's kind of cool.
Yeah.
This has been Science Podcast with Rachel, who knows science, and me, who knows fucking colors.
I know, like, enough genetics to get myself into trouble, but not enough to get out. So I look forward to hearing all about how I'm wrong, because I'll learn something new.
I think every episode we should just say one purposefully uninformed thing and then just wait for people on the internet to be, like, really pissed off at us.
This feels like good engagement. Like, this doesn't feel like an engagement grab. This feels organic. We should do that. Especially since we've done it every time already. So it's
I know. Fucking, like, last time we were like, that's not the order of the Sherlock Holmes books. I had no idea. I was like, psh, wrong.
I've only watched the Masterpiece Theater. I don't know.
Well, and the one with Benedict Cumberbatch, because he had good hair.
I didn't watch
You have
that
Benedict
one.
Cumberbatch hair now. Look at that. Like, but Benedict Cumberbatch at the time of Sherlock, when he just had, like, those wavy, like, sex curls, he had good hair.
I did not watch that one. I watched the like Masterpiece Theater, like the OG.
If you're watching Murdoch Mysteries and you're into the guy liner, I feel like you're going to feel some positive feelings when you watch Sherlock with Benedict Cumberbatch, because he has like, I think it's the 2010s is when it was made. He has like 2010s emo light British mean guy. He's not just autistic coded. He, like, basically walks around with, like, a big flaming sign that screams autism, like, everywhere he goes. Like, he really there's something about a hot mean autistic guy that it had a moment in culture.
I don't always love Benedict Cumberbatch. It takes me a while to, like, do I want to watch him or not?
Well, all right, this is the last episode. The friendship just ended. I know.
I'm sorry. I
hate to admit that I like him in everything I've seen him do. I think he does a very good job, except I would very much like him to either never attempt an American accent again or to spend some one-on-one time with me and I will help him.
Yeah. I'm mad at him for Imitation Game because Alan Turing was actually like a really nice guy. And they cast Benedict Cumberbatch as him. And so he just made him his standard Benedict Cumberbatch, Cumberbitch, his like asshole character that he always plays. And I was a little bit mad because it kind of makes his story slightly less tragic.
I know that I've seen, I know, I think I own The Imitation Game. Maybe I haven't seen it all the way through. All I really know about him is he was gay, right? And mm-hmm. he cracked the Nazi code.
He invented, he's the inventor of the modern computer, basically.
Yeah.
And he cracked the code. He like won the war. Yeah, because he got convicted of being gay, basically. And then he was given the option of chemically castrating himself or going to prison. And so he chemically castrated himself. Jeez. And he ended up committing suicide.
But you're saying that the movie is like not a flattering portrayal of him? Like it's a...
It's not who he was. Like if you're going to make a biopic about a character, like be the guy.
Yeah.
Don't be Benedict Cumberbatch as a gay man who ends up committing suicide. Like be Alan Turing.
And isn't that exactly what we've been talking about for like the two Murdoch Mysteries episodes? Like I hate when it's like you have like an actual real person and you could do a faithful representation of that real person and you're like... fuck it. And you fudge all this shit. Like I find that, I agree with you. I find that frustrating. I went through a phase of like, oh, Cumberbatch is in that, like add to cart. Like I think, so I'm sure I have it here somewhere.
But there's a subtle but important difference between like, I'm Benedict Cumberbatch, I take no notes, and like, I'm gear. I'm here. I'm here to fucking play around. You want me to be?
No, but it's not. I'm not mad at a horny gear performance. Please don't ever misunderstand. I support a horny gear performance. I don't care if he's here playing a real person.
I'm not mad about that. I'm mad about like gear never plays a tragic real life character that he's like, what if he wanted to fuck everyone and they were like, but he didn't in real life. And he's like, I kind of feel like he did. Like I've spent a lot of time with this character. I've been method acting. And I just really feel like the last three women I've slept with, it was because I was trying to be that character. Just kidding.
I like that this entire podcast is like the most positive flattering slander. Do you know what I mean? Well, actually, no, wait. It's recorded, so I guess it's libel technically. See, yeah. Look, I just corrected myself. But like I like that it's like the most time. I know in real time I caught my dummy dumb self. I feel like we are so degrading about his character, and yet we're like, but this is why we love him. Like we're just like he's such a horny sack of shit, and that's why we are such fans. I realize that like anytime that you are going to portray like a real historical character, whether it's something goofy like Murdoch Mysteries or something serious like the Imitation Game, like I realize like you have to do like little elisions and you have to like judge stuff around a little bit because like otherwise you'd have to make like a real time movie that lasted the like 43 years of a person's life. Like there's
right.
you have to make like cuts and changes and shit. Like I get that. But I get frustrated where it's like totally made up stuff. Like, okay, so for example, I watched Welcome to Chippendales. Okay. Anyways, so when I first saw like the ads for it, I was like, okay, it's about this real life murder that happens at Chippendales of this guy that starts Chippendales with Steve Banerjee. He's jealous of his girlfriend who is a model and she's going to become an actress. And he's like, no, you're going to sleep around. You're going to sleep around. And she's like, I'm not sleeping around. Like, I have opportunities for better things in my career. And he's like, nope. And he killed her. And so I was like, okay, that's what this whole series is going to be about. That happens in like the first or second episode. And they're like, okay, done, whatever. And then the rest of it is just about like them growing the Chippendales brand. And there's actually a second murder. I had no idea. There's a second murder of this guy that was like their dance coordinator. And he and Steve Banerjee, they butt heads a lot. And so they end up basically breaking Chippendales into like two organizations. There's like, here's the original bar in Los Angeles. And then there's the touring company that goes all across the country. And it's the touring company that is run by the guy who's the dance coordinator, and they're making all this money. They're making more and more money because the main Chippendales location in Los Angeles, they keep getting, they keep breaking like every single occupancy, like restriction, and like hours restriction. And like any, like they keep getting into trouble. They keep doing shit wrong and pissing away money. And then Steve Banerjee, like anytime you could make a bad business decision, that guy was there. Like he was like somehow like only bad choices. And I'm not going to say that I don't identify with that innately, like as a human person, but like in terms of a business, it's like not good. So he ends up getting mad. He like feels like the other guy is stealing money from him because he's like Chippendales is my idea. And this guy who's like touring around the country, he tricked me. And that's how he's getting all of this money. And that's how he's so successful. And so anyways, he like hires a guy to kill him. So like that's the short version. So I was like, okay, like this happened in like the mid 80s, I think. Like it's not too long ago. Like this whole, like both murders and starting Chippendales, I think it's like late 70s through the maybe like early 90s. Like that's, it's a short period of time. People are still alive. Like newspaper articles are still around. Like there are books all about what happened. Like there's like, you can watch like the nightly news. You could interview people. Like it's find outable. It's like learnable. And in, so I watched it and I was like, oh, this is really good. I feel like I learned a lot. I feel like I learned a lot. And then I Googled afterwards and it was like, oh yeah, this character is not real. This character is a combination of like six other people. And the wife of Steve Banerjee, who is a pretty big character in this, she's played by Annalee Ashford. So she has like a huge role. The woman died like semi-recently. And even Annalee Ashford was like, there are no pictures of her. I have no idea what she was like. I have no idea what she actually like was involved in. I don't know what she knew or she didn't know. And I'm like, it's frustrating because I feel like you're presenting yourself as like, here is a lightly dramatized version of what happened. And really, you're just like making shit the fuck up and guessing and going, I don't know, I bet she did cocaine. And I'm like, that's a big guess. That's like a big thing you just fucking threw out for this woman who might have been involved in all the shady shit Steve Banerjee was doing. She might have had no idea. I don't know. And apparently you don't know. But you're just like throwing that out there. And like, she only died recently. Like her children are alive. Like her friends and family are still alive. And you're just like, you're just shitting on the character of a person. And also like in terms of a, I don't want to say educational because it's, you know, it's meant to be entertainment, but like in terms of like, you're presenting a real life thing. I feel like you have some obligation to do the research to otherwise just make a fake thing, right? Like make it about a fake club with fake murders and then you can say whatever the fuck you want. So I that's the same frustration that I get when looking at in any of these Murdoch Mysteries episodes where they're like fake characters or like giving inspiration to like real people, like you're taking away from things like from their actual accomplishments. And then when you like have the real people like do or say things that like are out of their character because like you didn't bother doing any research, or you're like, yeah, I know the guy was like this, but actually fuck it. I feel like he's going to be like this now. Well, like if I don't know anything about Sir Arthur Conan Doyle or Steve Banerjee or Mrs. Steve Banerjee, because I don't remember her name, like now that's who I think this person is. Like now that's like you have just colored this real person. Because I think that you've done the research and the work, and like you haven't done the research and the work, you've just like just guessed and made shit up, and it seems a little unfair. Because like I don't know anything about Alan Turing. I would have watched that movie and been like, oh, this is who Alan Turing was. He was a Cumberbatch. He was an old timey Cumberbatch. Okay, you know, like I think you have some responsibility if you're using a real person in a fictional setting. And like, because like you have that responsibility to that person and to the people who are going to be watching your program and thinking that they're going to be learning about it, about that person.
Yeah.
And then, like I said, like just separately, like it just pisses me off when you're like, no, my fictional character, they're smarter than that real character. They really invented this thing. It's like, fuck you. It just pisses me off. It's like, I know I said last episode, it's masturbatory, and I stand by that. I think it kind of sucks.
Yeah.
Anyways. Science is where we left off. So we find out that dead guy was a jerk. He drove his wife to suicide. He had two sons, Harcourt and Mycroft. They both had the one blue eye, one brown eye. And then this is where I lose all track of the plot, because what they say, I tried so hard and you had to explain it to me like I was a dummy dum-dum, which I am. So what the son Harcourt says is, my family could only afford to keep one of us. So they kept me and they sent my brother Mycroft away to an orphanage. And Harcourt is like, I was really messed up about this, so that's why I named my dummy Mycroft and why I treat him like my brother. That's why I'm like crazy in the head. And then my brother, Mycroft, like had a terrible homeless life and was crazy and bad. And he goes from, Harcourt goes from saying, oh, I'm the one that killed my dad, to my adult twin brother came in from off the street. And he was mad at my dad for having abandoned him. And so he killed my dad. And basically I watched and I like, I'm going to take the blame for it because it was unfair, basically, that I was the one that got the good life. Why did I get the good life? So I'm going to take the blame for it so my brother can go free and he can have a chance at like some peace, whatever. That's his version. Turns out not true. Like, so I spent the whole episode being like, wait, what? And then it turns out just wrong. So everything I just said to you, bullshit and lies, no one cares. Except there were, in fact, two children with the heterochromia, Harcourt and Mycroft, and they were the sons of this guy. They did exist at some point. That turns out to be legit. So anyways, so we spend the whole episode with fucking the guy with Harcourt, like, talking through his creepy dummy. And, like, I just can't. We need to have less of that.
I like how creeped out everybody is by it, though. Everybody's creeped out by it.
Yeah.
Because it's making fun of everybody. Like, grossly making fun of everybody. Like, it calls Crabtree crabby.
Yeah, but it's like dumb vaudeville humor.
And they're like, can we take the puppet? And he's like, no, we can't take the puppet yet. They let him keep this puppet a really long time.
It's the 1890s. They would have chopped that thing to bits with a fucking axe that they would have just had like around as a paperweight. they would have beaten the shit out of him with the puppet.
Yeah. This feels unusually sensitive. This feels so sensitive.
But that's what I mean, is it's like the show is like sometimes like extra modern and sometimes it's like, no, old timey. And I'm like, just okay, all right. Like,
because they're like, no, he needs it. He's traumatized. He's using the puppet to talk for him.
In this one instance, could we be extra old timey and just beat the shit out of him with his own puppet? Like, can we just use the puppet like a sack of oranges and just beat him and there's no mark? Like, can we just do that? But yeah. No. So anyways, so Harcourt, like, so Harcourt Force is like, no, I'm the killer. And then he's like, no, my twin brother is the killer, but I'm confessing because I'm doing it to protect him. Like, I'm going to take the fall for him. And then Murdoch is like, well, you're taking the fall for him. It wasn't you. I release you. Like, go onto the streets. And the guy's like, thumbs up. All right, bye-bye. I keep forgetting that this is an audio medium, and I'm trying to like make thumbs finger up. Guns at the camera. Like, nope, that's not going to come through because it's audio, you goddamn dumbass. Okay, so I get stupider like as the night goes on. So so Murdoch is like, go, you know, I release you, go with God, vaya con Dios. And so Harcourt leaves and he disappears and we don't know where he is. And then Murdoch is like, wait a minute. Like psychic autism moment. And he thinks about the picture that he saw of the family when they were kids. And he realizes that somehow Harcourt is not his eyes and the eyes of the child in the picture who has been identified as Harcourt. They're like, the colors are reversed.
They're inverted. Yeah.
Which now that I think about it, how does he know which kid in the picture is Harcourt? Like they're just two twins.
Right. Or that the photography negative wasn't switched.
Yeah. Maybe the one twin had like a little M sweater and the one had an H sweater and I just missed it, but like in Harry Potter. Yeah. But he's like, oh shit, it's the other twin. His eyes are reversed. We were talking to Mycroft the whole time. And I was like, okay. So
the guy, like, I don't know. All I remember is the scene where he's like throwing the puppet's head up and down. Like it has the puppet can raise and lower its head. And so it's like, woo, and spinning around. And I was like, I fucking hate this.
I fucking hate the puppet. It was, although I will say that they did, the actor that they got to play, I think Mycroft, but like he called himself Harcourt the whole time. So that guy, the living son.
Yeah.
He, whenever he had to do ventriloquism, like whenever he had to throw his voice, like he was doing a very good job. Like, he looks like he is trained at doing it. Like you could see, you know, when you have ventriloquists and they like their mouths aren't moving, but you can see their Adam's apple because it's always a man.
Yeah.
They're lonely. You can just see the Adam's apple go like up and down and up and down. Like he was really doing it. And like, I appreciated that. Like it is a skill. It is a talent.
Yeah.
But it's sort of like, this is mean to say, but like, so I can't do ventriloquism. Like it's a skill and it's a thing that you have to like learn and like work at and like good for you. I don't have the desire to learn how to do it, but like, I will admit that it is an ability, but it sort of feels like if you said like, oh, I can blow myself, like it also seems like a thing that you would have had to like learn and practice at, but a thing that like I can't do. And also I'm not actually that impressed by, but like, I will admit it's a thing that I bet you put a lot of hours into, but like, also, like, it grosses me out.
I think Mycroft had been using the puppet, though. This wasn't, like, the first time Harcourt had been using Mycroft the puppet for a long time.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, no. Because they're like, oh, yeah, he was doing it, like, professionally. He was, like, at clubs and shit, which...
that was his job. Like,
can you imagine going to a bar and then someone comes out and it's like, here's Mycroft and his fucking puppet. I'd be like, boo! Boo, go away. Throw beer bottles at him.
I hope they introduce him just like that. This is Mycroft and his fucking puppet. No, not the fucking puppet. Woo!
As long as it's not like the other episode where there were actual fucking puppets, because no more of that. No more of that. Okay.
Never again.
Yeah, so somehow he realizes that like the one they were talking to is the one that we thought like ran away, whatever. And then they go back to the apartment because he remembers, because like that whole thing at the beginning where the puppet's like, he's still here. He's still here. They're like, what if? And they open up the wardrobe and somehow they know to like pop up the bottom wooden panel, like the floor of the wardrobe. And inside is a curled up corpse of a 10-year-old child.
Yeah, they're like, oh, no.
I just shouldn't laugh at. And so it turns out that the other brother never ran away or never was sent away. He, I guess, just like died when they were kids. And now as an adult, Mycroft was like, oh, you know who's a good scapegoat? My dead ghost brother. I bet that's a good, I'll blame him. I will pretend, I'll spend 20 years learning how to be a ventriloquist. I'll name my puppet after my dead brother. Or sorry, after myself. I will pretend to be my dead brother. I will go on tour as my dead brother with the puppet that has my name. The fuck is it? The more I talk about this, the more I'm like, the
plan
fuck?
Is coming together.
Yeah. And then I will kill my father with varnish, but not good puppet varnish, because I actually would like to, I'm going to take care of my puppet really well for the 20 years before I toss it away. So I'm going to give my puppet quality A+ varnish. I'm going to give my dad garbage horseshit varnish, which will extra... I don't know, prove that it wasn't me that did it, because as a puppet aficionado, I would only own the highest quality of puppet varnishes.
Which is, in fact, how they figure it out. They're like, no, he wouldn't buy cheap varnish, because he is setting it up like he is framing himself, like Mycroft is framing Harcourt.
Who wrote this? What sick mind? What broken soul?
I don't know. Because once again, it's 1890s. He could have just been like, peace out, motherfucker, and left. And no one would have ever caught him ever.
He could have written, I killed my father and here is how. Love, Mycroft. P.S. I've told everyone my name is Harcourt for the last 20 years. Pinned that to his father's corpse and gotten on a freight train like a hobo. And he would have been just fine. Like, I just... been just
fine. They never would have found him.
No.
And yet he has cooked up the most complicated, long, convoluted, 20-year-long conspiracy.
And I'm not even 100% sure. We have discussed this, like people talk about the JFK assassination, and I am still not 100% sure that we fully. But anyways, so.
Have you ever seen the movie Nell? Have you ever seen the movie Nell with Jodie Foster?
Mm-mm.
Where they go to the mountains of North Carolina. Where there's this woman that has her own dialect.
This sounds vaguely familiar as like a cultural artifact.
Yeah. And it's because she and her sister were twins and her mother had them out of wedlock. So she kept them at home and she had a stroke. So they learned how to talk from a woman with a stroke and they never lost their twin language. And so her twin dies and she like decorates her twin's corpse. That's what this reminded me of.
Oh my God. That seems like one of those movies that, like, at the time would have been very poignant, and now it seems like it would be unintentionally hilarious.
It's got Liam Neeson in it, I think. He's, like, the researcher that goes to try to figure out what her language is. And it's Jodie Foster, and she has to do, like, the Lord's Prayer all the time, and she's just going, Tay-me, Tay-me. And they're like, what, honey? And she's like, Tay-me.
Okay, so exactly like what I was picturing, were at the time poignant, but now it just seems like laughably offensive. Yes, okay.
Yes. Anyway, this is what kind of reminded me of.
We'll do a double feature. We'll watch that and then we'll watch Teeth, which is the movie that I really think.
Yeah, Teeth and Nell. Those thematically, that feels just, it feels like exactly what you need to combine.
I think watching those two movies together will either cure everything that ails us or will be the impetus for our murder spree across the country.
Ail everything that cures us, yes. Should we discuss Gare's role in this episode?
We have finally gotten to the good Gare part. I got through the weird puppet shit. So,
as Sir Arthur Conan Doyle on a mission.
He is so good. Okay, so once you, so just like close your eyes and like fast forward through all the weird puppet dead twin bullshit because it's not going to get good. But Gare is in town, still Sir Arthur Conan Doyle, still to us, ever Gare. So he's in town and he's asking about this this closed case that they have where there was a, again, I'm like, I feel like I'm not getting the details right. I'm hoping I am. Where there's a dead Chinese immigrant who had bruises all over his body. And so they accuse this, like, I don't know, like naturopath basically of killing him. Cause they see the bruises and they're like, oh, he beat the shit out of this guy till he died.
Yeah.
And Gare's like, what if, heads up, what if it was actually cupping? He's like the Eastern medicine practice of cupping where you take the little glass cups and you heat them up and they make little vacuums and that makes little bruises on your skin. Like what if, I think that's what this actually was. So this death was accidental. It was not a murder. So he's like, I really need to talk to the defendant. Like I need to talk to the convicted killer and we need to like undo this. We need to like, now it'd be like a habeas hearing basically. But he's like, I need to like talk to this guy. I need to find him. So he's like, it's really, really important. He ends up finding out that the defendant has died in jail or prison or like wherever he is. He is like, he's died. He's not able to like to talk to him. Gare is just like overcome. He's like super upset about this. And so Murdoch is like, why are you so upset about this? Like rando cold case? Like, or not, I guess not cold case. It's like closed case. Why are you so upset about this?
Yeah.
I'm like, Gare goes full Gare, and I love this so much. So he's talking about, he's talking about his wife, Louise, whose nickname is Tui, which I think is such a cute nickname for Louise. He's like, she has consumption, and I've been trying to help find a cure for her consumption. And it turns out, I don't know if this is accurate or not, because like, unlike with everything else that like wormed a hole in my brain, I did not actually look up whether you can use cupping to help with consumption. But he's like cupping is a treatment for consumption. Like this guy does cupping. Like I want to learn more about it. And Murdoch is like, okay, like I know we have a large Chinese population here in Toronto, but you know where also is a large Chinese population? Fucking London, where you live, in England, where your wife is. Why are you here, man? And he like realizes that Gare basically just feels so helpless that he can't stand to like still be in London with his wife. And he's like using this as an excuse to like, I'm going to find the guy that does cupping way the hell over in Toronto. Like, and that'll be my excuse for like not just sitting here and watching you slowly die while I'm powerless to help you. And so he's having this conversation with Murdoch and Gare goes fucking teary eyed. He is like, you see the struggle on his face. You see the like the weight on his soul. And I was like, ugh, masterclass. In the same episode as fucking Twinsy McPuppet murder. And we get Gare and the cupping and I can't help my wife and I'm sitting here watching her die. I was like, oh, are you fucking just fucking like that's such a characteristic to be like, everything else around me is juvenile, amateur hour, footsie bullshit, and I'm going to come in and I'm going to slap my acting dick on the table and you're all going to blow me because of how amazing I am. Like, just
I'm going to show up.
Yeah.
Yes, this is episode 6 of the first season of an unproven television show that has a fucking puppet in it, but you hired me. You got me.
You got here the full Gare. He like turns the light bulb all the way up. He like screws it in until it's like wow, 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 wow. It's like, oh shit. Oh fuck. It was so poignant and so emotional. And like it's not a very long scene. It's literally just Like the stuff about like the actual crime, like the Chinese practitioner crime, that's like scattered throughout the whole puppet bullshit. So it's like a little bit here, a little bit there. And then the actual like emotional, here's what I'm really doing here scene. It's very short, but it stabs you right in the fucking gut. You're like, oh, that's right. Like, you're Geraint Wyn Davies. Like, you know how to do this. Like I'm like grabbing someone by the heartstrings and yanking till they explode. Like, that is your deal. That is your bag. I fucking love it. So Murdoch is like, okay, man, like, why don't you, like, yes, you're powerless, but like, we're all powerless. Like, why don't you go and spend, like, your wife doesn't have much time. Like, go and be with her. Like, that's not nothing. Like, I know that you, like, right. You want to fix it. You want to do something. Like, you can't. None of us can. Just be with her. Just go. So anyways, he goes. So, like, that's, like, half of Geert's performance. Because Geert does two things. He does two things very well. One is, I'm going to grab you by the heart, and I'm going to make your soul hurt. The other thing is, I'm going to swing my dick until it finds a lady. So, yeah. Somehow he manages to do both of those things in this episode, which is like as confusing as the whole puppet chronology. Because, well, half the episode is, I love my wife. I care for my wife. She is dying and it makes my heart hurt because I can't fix it. And watching her is the most painful thing and I cannot bear to do it. Like, that is half. The other half is, hey, what up? You want to fuck? And I'm just like, so the other half. And it's accurate. The Geert performance. I know. So yeah, the other half.
Yeah. Nuanced.
Such nuance. Such depth of character.
It's got layers.
Which I just like. I know we've been discussing how I don't like libel of actual like having real people, like libel of real people. But at the same time, I choose to believe that Sir Arthur Conan Doyle also could fuck, because it just makes it so much funnier in my head that he was just like also a dick on wheels. Anyways, so during the other half of the episode, when Geert is sort of like trying to act like he's investigating the Chinese cupping murder, which I don't really know why. Like, he's acting like, huh, I wonder what these bruises are from.
He's pretending that he's going to write a book based on Murdoch, that Murdoch is going to be his next detective.
Okay.
And that he's going to be solving these, like, cold crimes. He's going to be opening old cases and coming up with new ideas. And they're like, nobody cares about cold cases. Nobody's going to watch or listen to anything about people solving murders that have already been solved. And he's like, oh, is this going to be big?
And then winks at the camera. But like,
true crime, it's going to be big.
I sort of don't know. Like, you already had an excuse to come here and want to talk to the cupping practitioner. Like, why did you need an extra level? So you have the fake level of, I'm going to write a story. And then the semi-fake level of, no, I want to talk to this guy because he's the only one who knows about cupping. And then the real level of, my wife is dying.
Yeah, because he didn't want anybody to know how much it mattered to him.
That his wife was dying?
Yeah. Yeah, I can see that. No, I'm just here for, like, research. I'm researching a book. It's not because my wife is dying and I am dying too inside. Yeah,
but then why the cupping? Do you know what I mean? Like, why not just, I'm here to research all cold cases? Like, I know why for the TV show, because then you can be
he picks that particular one. I can't remember why he picks that particular one.
Because of the cupping. Because the cupping is a cure for consumption. No,
I mean, I know that's why he did, but I don't know what the reason that he gives them for, like, why he's researching this crime. Because it's clearly, it must be Murdoch's crime, because he's trying to figure out, like, how Murdoch made decisions about stuff.
Because he wants to write about, Murdoch and crime. So, like, he's like, oh, you solved this one. Tell me how you solved this one.
Right. And in the meantime, we have this really weird, convoluted puppet episode where this guy is literally confessing to the murder and Murdoch's like, I don't buy it. I just don't think that's true. Yeah. But then the cold case is like, he walked in and this guy was in the room with the body and the body had bruises on it. And he was like, oh, that's the murderer right there. Get that son of a bitch.
Well, maybe that's like meant to be like when Murdoch was younger, because it's like an older case. So he was like less autistic superpower.
Maybe he wants to see his evolution. I don't know. It's just weird because he's investing so much work into the puppet thing. And then we're learning about this thing where he was just like, I don't know that guy.
See, like, that's what I mean. Like, all these are just extra convoluted. It would have made more sense if they were like, oh, this is like a George Crabtree case. And George was like, I don't know, bruises? Definitely he beat him to death. All right.
Yeah.
Done. Donezo. Yeah, but that's what I mean is like all these, like I like these episodes for the individual scenes. And then when you're like, wait a minute, what happened? It just, it all kind of falls into pieces in your hands. But I still, yeah. I like Murdoch Mysteries. But okay, so we've got the half where he's like super sad and pining for his wife. And then we have the other half where they're like, Gary, you want to be Gary? And he's like, I will gear it up. So he is talking to Dr. Julia Ogden, who is the woman who at this point is just sort of like mild flirtation that she has with William Murdoch. And then eventually, like, she ends up marrying him, I think, like, 16 seasons later, because it's a slow burn. It's a slow burn romance. So, but at this point, they just sort of, like, are, you know, flirty, friendly with each other. So, Gare is like, she's unattached. So, he and he is talking to Dr. Ogden, because I guess Dr. Ogden, she's the only coroner, you know, kind of like Natalie in Forever Night. So he's like, okay, you were the coroner on the dead Chinese guy with all the bruises. Tell me all about what you found and like tell me about what you remember from the case, blah, blah, blah. And then he's like, oh, you know what we should do? We should like talk privately. Probably, you know what? Probably we should do that like, I don't know, over dinner, like maybe just the two of us at like a fancy restaurant and, yeah. You know, I don't know, like see where it goes afterwards. I don't know, like that could be cool. You're yeah. curly haired coroner that it turns out is exactly my type. So like let's whatever. So he calls her the enchanting Dr. Ogden. He does the full-on eye contact kiss on the hand because that's how he do. That's how Gare says hello. And then this is my favorite part. And like, I don't know whether this was intentional on the character's part or intentional on the Gare just being Gare part. I like to believe it's a little bit of column A, a little bit of column B. But the way that they – so he's talking to Dr. Ogden and they're like, yeah, we'll go to dinner and we'll discuss this case. So the camera is looking at Gare and then Dr. Ogden like leaves towards us. So she kind of walks like through the camera. Gare's eyes go right to her ass and follows the ass out of the room. And I was like, that's immortalized on the screen forever now.
Yeah.
So. You took Sir Arthur Conan Doyle and you were like, what if, hear me out, yeah. Horny as fuck while his wife is dying.
It is his profession and his pleasure.
It is his gift and his curse.
It is his gift and his curse.
If there's a, I mean, I'm sure the actress who plays Dr. Julia Ogden, I'm sure it's a great ass. We don't see it because like the angle, like we see her walk towards us. I'm sure it is a perfect peach of a butt, but he is like, his face is like, but you know what? It's kind of, it feels like a throwback to Forever Night. I know that I can't have any episode of this podcast and not say Forever Night 17 times.
Yeah. Well,
because obviously that's where my heart lives.
Yeah.
I don't know about yours coming 81 kilo.
I mean, I made an entire podcast about it. So I don't know.
Yeah. I don't know. Like you're aware of the show, like sort of like, you know, Brad's jokes.
I've watched it maybe once. I don't know. Definitely don't have every single episode memorized by title. It's fine.
We're going to get to Stratford in the fall and there's going to be a big sign with like a picture of us and like also like every podcast with like a big X through it that's like, do not let these crazy bitches on campus. We'll find a way.
What the word? Don't fake glasses and a fake mustache?
Like, we're wearing the Arthur Conan Doyle mustache, which is like bigger than our whole heads.
Hey, it works for Garrett. Hello.
Oh my God. So, but it's like, it reminds me of like how in Forever Night, it feels weird from a modern perspective, the way that his character is like, his heart is either like, depending on like how you read the show. I know we read the show maybe a little bit differently, but his heart is with Natalie and or Jeanette. Like that's where his heart lives. But his dick is with every woman that walks by. And it feels sort of like from a modern perspective, it feels sort of like a conflict in the character because he's like very like emotional and guarded with his heart, but he's very, very free with his dick. And it feels sort of like, oh, you've really split those two parts of your psyche. Like you've split that into like two different, like there's like the love with my brain and there's the love with my balls. And like those two loves are not the same. And I don't see any conflict with me being like, no, Natalie, I can't love you with my heart. Jeanette, like we can't, like we're not going to be together and married forever anymore. I can't give you the life that you want, but also hey, random woman, I can give you my dick and my teeth like twice a day, three times on Sundays. Like, and that's fine. Right. Cause that's, they're like different things. And from a modern perspective, it feels weird because it's like, I want those two things to be married in this character. I want him to right. want to love Natalie and also fuck Natalie. I want him to love Jeanette and also fuck Jeanette. Or I want him to fuck the woman of the week and maybe love the woman of the week. But like he, like for him, like they're two separate, there are two separate wolves inside his body. And they're always like,
yeah.
Somehow they like, I guess they're not fighting. They're two separate wolves that like, just like they eat different foods, I guess.
They're together. And they just, like, they're a pack. They hang out.
Yeah.
They're
bros.
Stuff together. Yeah.
They're bro wolves.
Sometimes they go out alone. Sometimes they go out together.
Yeah. But they're like two separate animals. Whereas I feel like normally when I'm watching a character or reading a character, like I want it to be one wolf that encompasses both. So in this, it feels like that again. Like his dick is like, hello, coroner. But his heart is like, I'm very, very sad about my dying wife. And I can't think about my dying wife. You know what will distract me? Fucking the coroner.
Like, yeah.
So it's kind of, I don't know, it's sort of interesting. Not that everything in his career is a throwback to Forever Night, but I like that we can frame it that way, you know?
Yeah.
I just, so, and then, okay, so we have the Gare story, we have the puppet story, and then at the very, very fucking end, because the show cannot leave well enough alone, after it shows us the dead little boy body in the cupboard, it also shows us a dead little boy ghost, so the ghost of the twin brother when he was like, I guess he died at like 10, so it's a little 10-year-old boy ghost.
Yeah.
And I was like, we just had an episode where we were comfortable in ambiguity, and now we're like, psych, there's a ghost.
Yeah, I didn't love how concrete this was because we left it on such a beautiful, ambiguous note of like, is the supernatural real or not? And then this one, it's like, oh no, he straight up sees a ghost. It's fine.
Yeah. Well, what's weird is, so I've seen, so like I said, I haven't watched this show in any kind of like a correct order. I've just cherry picked around and I found out that there was a vampire episode. So naturally I was like, click, I'm going to watch that one. And they like not, like it doesn't spoil it, I don't think. But it ends up very firmly in the realm of monsters are not real. Here's like the scientific explanation for like what happened. And here's like the real world version of this. It was not a vampire. There are no monsters. And in that episode, there's a couple of references made to other episodes where like supernatural things happen. Like there's a mummy episode. I think there might be like some others, but like they mentioned, they're like, oh, we've had this monster and that monster. Now we have this monster. Like they're like, someone makes like an offhand comment. And even in the ones I know I saw the mummy episode, even there, it was sort of like, we said that there's a mummy's curse, like a curse on the mummy's tomb and the mummy's objects, I guess. But even there, it was sort of like, sort of more ambiguous, like maybe there's a curse, but maybe it's one of those, I heard there's a curse. And so I'm going to put things in motion.
Yeah.
And here's how these things are explained. But at the end, they're like, oh, but what about this? Maybe it was the curse. Like, I'm fine with it being ambiguous like that. Like, I don't mind it. And I think in the first episode we watched, I think it's really nice. Like, it's very sweet. Like, either this guy's dead fiance came back or this woman, like, pretended to be his dead fiance to give him closure. Like, either version of that is okay. Good. Like, I enjoy that as an audience. But like for this where it's like, and I don't know, a fucking ghost, bam. I was like, fucking it. Come on, guys.
Yeah, I didn't love it.
You gave me like a weeping gare. Like you had me. You had me in the palm of your fucking hand. You could have given me less barf and less brown teeth and less varnish and zero ghosts. And like that would have been great. But instead you took like a beautiful gare performance and you're like, what if we just throw actual horseshit on top of it? What if we just make a horseshit sundae with some gare at the bottom? And so I'm like,
yeah.
So I don't, for this episode, like, how would you rate it? Because I feel so many feelings about it.
I think I'm going to go 3 raised eyebrows out of 5. He didn't get to actually kiss anybody.
Well, he kissed the hand.
He kissed the hand, but he didn't get to, like, do his full thing. And he got his, like, inside joke. He got his, like, haha, I'm in on some humor that, like, your parents are going to think this is really funny. Like, it was, he got his, like, in-joke moment. Yeah. He got to do some eyebrow some eyebrow acting. He got to do some hand acting. He got to do the cute, like, he loves the funny little comedy moments in the serious one. And he got to do the interrupting the puppet where he was, like, banging on the window to get Murdoch's attention and he'd have to go out and talk to him and then go back in and try to get back into the interview and then he'd bang on the grate again.
The physical comedy.
Yeah. Good. Yeah.
Oh, so. Yeah. And we, and speaking of which, we didn't talk about, he gets drunk in a bar and does like an old timey bar fight.
Yes. He gets to do like a choreographed fight scene, which is like, if there's not a lady and he can't do that, a choreographed fight scene is second best.
He's got to use his body somehow. I will say that I liked it less than when he does sword fighting. I think he's a very, very masterful sword fighter. I thought the bar fight was like fine. I thought he did a good job. I don't know. Somehow like it didn't ring like exactly real for me. And I don't know if it's just because like the whole vibe of the show is like goofy anyways.
Yeah.
So the people that are being punched are going to be like a little extra goofy in their responses.
Unless he's supposed to be like, drunk. So he's real over the top. Yeah.
I really appreciate, I liked him playing drunk and melancholy and beating the shit out of people in a bar. And like, I realized that like drunk melancholy bar fight could have gone like a very dark way. So I guess like, I understand why they didn't make it like the world's most depressing bar fight ever.
Yeah.
But like, if I have my druthers, if I had my choice, I'd say Gare kissing and then Gare sword fighting and then Gare doing old timey boxing in order of preference. But I will take a Gare bar fight. Absolutely.
Yeah. What's your rating?
So I feel like, what did I rate the last one? Like
pretty high,
maybe?
Pretty high.
Pretty high. I feel like I both liked this more and liked it less than the last one. Like I feel like I'm gonna give it a 7.5.
He's in it a lot less, and his role makes a lot less sense.
Yeah. Well, it feels like he was his own separate episode.
It like, feels like a fan. He was a fan favorite, and they brought him back.
I mean that could be. It's too bad we didn't know. Like. We could have been the entire letter writing campaign.
Yeah. Like no, we're
dear Yannick Bassan. More
still good. It's still on, isn't it? We could be like, can we get some more of that Doyle action?
If we get $6,000 together, we can show up on set and be like, more gear.
Oh my God.
Where's the gear?
$6,000. I can't.
Well, and like, I can't. So I looked up the company that runs it. It's not actually the TV show like network itself. It's like a separate company that does like TV show themed tours. So I can't blame the TV show. Like, it's not the TV show's fault.
No.
And I'm sure it's like,
it's this
I'm sure it's a very nice tour. Like, it's, you know, like it seems like they put you at like super swanky hotels. And like, I'm sure like I get that they're expensive. I just like, I will never. $6,000 is always going to be like too much for me to pay for like a tour.
Right.
Like it's like,
I'm going to be shouting, this had better be worth my $6,000 the entire time I'm doing it. Oh my God. Am I going in here? This had better fucking be worth my $6,000. I did not sleep great last night. That bed was not worth my $6,000.
That was a $2,000 bed at most.
You show up and the set is completely empty. I'm like, no, I want money back. This isn't worth $6,000.
You call Yannick. You call him right now. You make him juggle for my entertainment. $6,000.
$6,000. Scrum. Yeah. That'd be me the entire time. He's got some good moments in this episode, but overall, he makes so much less sense.
Yeah. But I feel like his... Okay, so I feel like he is part of the murder mystery in the first episode. Like, he's investigating it, and like that's how his piece fits into the puzzle. I feel like here... He doesn't really fit into the puzzle. He's just sort of like, I was bored and I showed up and, hey, you got a puppet. Let me whack him with a stick. So like in that aspect, it's like less good. But then his own particular story of my wife is dying from consumption and I'm so overcome with grief that I had to get on a boat and sail across the ocean because I could not handle being powerless to help her. I'm like, oh man, my fucking panties, like my heart and my panties together.
Yeah.
Like, oh God. Like, I know, I realize I'm not totally a rube. I know I'm like a little bit of a rube. Like, I realize that you can, there's like a little, like a, there's like a vapor stick you can put under your eyes and it makes you tear up and like you can make yourself look like you're crying on
no,
camera.
No, he
like,
never uses that. Don't even but insult no. him. No.
But like, I'm aware that like not every time someone is crying on camera are they overcome by their own emotional reaction to the fictional character they're playing. But like at the same time, like, sometimes when people are fake crying, it looks like fake crying. When he's crying, I'm like, oh no. Oh no.
No, Karen. I know. That's because all he does is think about that time that woman told him no thank you. And he's like, tears just, he's like, oh God, it was so awful. I didn't even, I've heard about it happening to other men, but I never thought it would happen to me.
It happened once. It shall never happen again.
Never again.
Oh, and he weeps. But like, I really, I like I say, I know I'm like sort of a rube maybe, but like when he tears up, I believe him tearing up. Like when he has that emotional moment, I believe it in my heart. Like it's
He
sells it. It was such a good. And like, is it undercut by him staring at that lady's ass one scene before?
No, not even a little. No, no.
But like, did I really enjoy that as like an actual human moment in the what the fuck is going on with the twins in the puppet episode? Like,
yeah.
So like, you know what? Okay, so I gave The Lost Friend, I think, a 7. I'm amending it. I'm gonna give it an 8. Just because of him having like that scene where he gets to fucking almost weep, but he's a man, a tough, strong man, so he can't obviously have a tear come out of his eye. He can have the tears dramatically poised in his eye, and that's, you know, that's the strong masculine way of crying.
Correct.
Yeah, I'm sure Matt would agree with us. Poor Matt is a study for all men. Okay, so we're gonna talk about studying Sherlock really quickly because it doesn't make any fucking sense. The first thing to say is. The first two episodes that Gare's in season one, he's dressed sort of the same and he has pretty much the same mustache and he bears a passing resemblance.
Yeah.
Not the very best, but like a passing resemblance to Sir Arthur Conan Doyle.
Yeah, just a little bit.
By season six, nobody gives a shit. They don't give a shit whether he looks like he used to. They don't give a shit whether he looks like Sir Arthur Conan Doyle. They don't give a shit whether like his clothing is like period appropriate. They're just like, whatever the fuck. You were in some kind of an old timey play next door. For two beers, a sandwich, and a hand job, would you be in our episode today? And he's like, thumbs up, guys, I'm in.
Second ham sandwich.
Yeah. Son of a bitch, I'm in. Like that.
Yeah. That's him.
So essentially the whole episode is we're investigating a bank job and we're trying to figure out like what's going on. And this crazy guy at the beginning shows up and he like foils the getaway plans essentially of the bank job. And this guy, everyone's like, oh, who are you? And his real name, his character's real name is David Kingsley. And he is a little cuckoo bananas, but he thinks he's Sherlock Holmes. So people are like, who are you? He's like, why, of course I'm Sherlock Holmes. And you recognized him as an actor who was on Being Human, the UK version, as an annoying vampire.
Yes.
And in this, he is an annoying human man.
So correct. Yes.
I feel bad because he's, okay, so the actor who played Harcourt, I was like, oh, your character is kind of creepy, but you seem compelling and I would watch you in other things. And like, I'm interested in you. This guy who plays Sherlock Holmes, who I have seen in other things, like I saw him in Being Human UK. He's a good actor, but also something about his mannerisms in both shows. And maybe it's just because I somehow picked like two shows where he played two annoying characters, but like in both things, I sort of want to slap him. I just want to be like, be less. You're giving me like an 8. Give me like a 2.5 max. Like just be not you.
At least dial your lips down. I don't know. Whatever you're doing with that, just stop.
We had a whole conversation about his lips and your theories behind his lips, which turned out not to be accurate. And now I don't know like what the reason behind his lips are, but like I'm compelled to find out.
I still believe my theories. I'm not dissuaded. I was like, it's because he's Welsh. You're like, he's not fucking Welsh. He's kind of Welsh.
He's from Liverpool, and we had to look at a map. And I was like, see how far Liverpool is from Wales? Like, I was like, well, here's Cardiff. Here's Liverpool. See how they're not the same fucking place? And also, he doesn't sound Welsh, and also is not Welsh. And also, Gary is Welsh / Canadian / everything else. And like, he doesn't have that weird lip curl. And you're like, no. Like, you had, like, normally I'm the one with the red string. So I like that in this episode, you pulled out your red string. It made me feel less alone. So thank you. But anyways, I feel bad because like, he's not a bad actor. He's not like an unbelievable actor.
No, he's fine. He's just punchable.
I've only seen him in things where he's sort of obnoxious and he does have kind of a mannerism of speaking. And I don't want to call it a lisp, but it's sort of like lisp adjacent. I don't think
it could be a regional something. Cause there's other, there's other British actors that have this, like, well, David Thewlis.
More than one person can have like a minor speech impediment. I don't know.
The same one.
Although maybe this is libel. Maybe I'm libeling them by saying that all English actors have speech impediments.
No. It's just there's like, I don't know. There's enough that I feel like there's a connecting thread here.
Yeah.
I just don't know what it is.
There is a way that he talks that's just sort of.
I don't even know where Wales is. So clearly, I need to do some research before I figure this out. Thank you. Yes. Bottom of the yeah.
Yeah.
I don't know. Everything not England is north of England. That's how England works.
Except for Wales, which is the only one that's not. Wales hangs out near the bottom. Wales is cool. I want to go, like, just side note, so I started learning Welsh on Duolingo, and like I'm having fun with it, even though it makes me feel fucking insane. Because Duolingo doesn't explain rules and shit to you; they just throw words out, and if you guess wrong, the little owl gets sad. Like that's a lot of pressure on me to make this owl happy for a language that is not spelled the way it sounds, and where you're not telling me any grammar rules. So like it's giving me stress, but because it's giving me stress, I want to go to Wales and be like, "Where is the blue sandwich?" Like I want to say something to someone. Like,
my daughter remembers that every time because you told her about that, and so she's like. Like a sandwich made with parsnips and cheese? She's like that? Like a parsnips and cheese sandwich?
I forgot about that. Yeah, it's Duolingo. I'm just going to say it right now. Duolingo is like a little bit racist because everything for Wales is like when they're like picking a noun to use, it's always cheese and parsnips and beer. And I was like, you guys, like if I go to the French one, is it all going to be like baguettes? And brie and cigarettes, like you're being a little offensive to the language I'm trying to learn. And if all I can say when I get there is parsnips, beer, and cheese, like I feel like they're gonna throw rocks at my face.
But right.
Because of Gear and because I was watching the Welcome to Wrexham show, which has been pretty compelling, and mainly because of Gear, I kind of want to go to Wales one day and like.
That you pull out a picture of Gare and you're like Geraint when Davies and they're like I don't know what you and he's
so we've got crazy guy David Kingsley. He thinks he's Sherlock Holmes. He's onto the bank job and he's like trying to help Murdoch solve it, and Murdoch the whole time looks sort of the way that you would look if some guy came up to you and was like, "I'm Sherlock Holmes." You'd be like, okay, I'm a little afraid that you have a knife in your pocket. I'm like, I'm a little nervous about it. So anyways, so they're working on solving the bank heist and figuring out like who was behind it. They have Gare show up to basically talk to this guy. And I don't know why they're like, if this guy thinks he's Sherlock Holmes, then meeting a guy who says he wrote the Sherlock Holmes books is going to like blow his brain into reality. But instead the guy's like, Sherlock Holmes made you famous. I think I created you. And Gare's like, touche. Like, I was like, what? So like we said, Gare shows up looking entirely differently than he does in the first two episodes. He has long hair. He has a goatee. He has a tiny mustache. He's wearing a straw boater, which here's the thing I didn't know about myself. Like, and I'm not proud of this. It turns out I'm like a little into a straw boater hat. That's not good. That's not normal.
No, it's good.
You shouldn't be into that. No, there's never... Like, it was not good when I was like, I'm really into guys just like dads from 90s movies. That was bad. But like, you could maybe find a guy, a hipster maybe, who's like into that. I'm not going to find a guy with a straw boater hat who is not the most obnoxious man who ever lived.
That's a fair point.
That's not in the cards for me. Yeah. Mm. Yeah. Unless he's like working as a gondolier in Venice.
Mm.
And even then, it's not the same kind of hat, so it won't. I mean, it's like similar, but it's not.
Gonna yeah,
happen. It would be a very specific form of like sex cosplay, is all I'm saying. So, Gare shows up looking like an entirely different man from an entirely different play, which you and I both just assumed. We like fully agree that like whatever, like he's wearing the costume from whatever the fuck else he was doing that day.
Yeah,
he didn't give a shit. Nobody else did. I think Yannick Besson was like, I can't be stood up by you again. So like, whatever you're going to do, just do it fast and get off. I am the number one bird here, sir. Like, So Gare talks to the guy and is like, I wrote your stories. I created you. And the guy's like, Sherlock Holmes made you famous. So perhaps I created you. And Gare's like, I have been bested by a crazy man. Touche. And like disappears for most of the rest of the episode. Because of course. Okay. So. And then again, this is my pet peeve come to light again. So Gare is talking to Sherlock Holmes and is like, you know that in my Sherlock Holmes stories, Sherlock Holmes like has died. He fell off the Reichenbach Falls and he's dead. And the guy's like, that could just be a thing that Dr. Watson thought. And then he like goes into like, here's how I would retcon that. I would be like, oh, I just walked backwards in my own footsteps and then climbed up the the stone, and that's why there's no extra footprints, blah, blah, blah. And Gary's like, huh, interesting. Like, maybe that's what I'll do. But as we've established earlier in this episode, we have Reichenbach Falls, like the death, the way he dies. And then right after that, we have Hound of the Baskervilles. So Hound of the Baskervilles is, I'm guessing from the 40 seconds of research I did before this episode, Hound of the Baskervilles is the first post-death story. So, like, how come now we're talking about how to retcon the death when, like, all the way back in season one, they were talking about post-death stories? Again, like, the show doesn't give a shit, but, like, it hurts my brain. Like, I didn't care about Sherlock Holmes stories before that. I mean, like, I want to read them. I haven't read them. I'd like to read them one day as, like, part of, like, you know, it's a cultural touchstone. But, like,
yeah,
my brain is already broken. Like, don't give me a, like, wait a minute, is this factually incorrect? Because that hits the one non-broken button in my brain that, like, works too well. Like, I need that to not be the active part of my brain tonight. Anyways, so it doesn't make a lot of sense, but it's one of those, like, I'm going to give you a suggestion, and Gare's like, huh, I think I will use the suggestion of this crazy man, and that's how I will retcon the death of Sherlock Holmes. So Gare fucks off for most of this. The episode, the guy, Sherlock Holmes, the fake Sherlock Holmes, is like, oh, this jewel thief thing reminds me of, and he names this fake Sherlock Holmes story, and Gare is like, that's not, I didn't write that one. I don't know. It's like the star of something. I don't, do you remember the name of it even?
No.
But it's like not a real, they like make up a Sherlock Holmes story. I think it's
like the star of Turin or something. And he's like, no, yeah. I didn't write that.
Yeah. Gare's like, I have no idea what you're talking about. So then Murdoch is like, hey, fake Sherlock Holmes, like tell me what the story is. And so Sherlock Holmes tells the story, and he like basically tells his own life story through the framing of a Sherlock Holmes story. His surrogate father was a thief who was like part of a gang of people that steal a jewel. And then he takes the jewel and puts it in his own safety deposit box. The other thieves end up killing him for the stolen jewel. They go to the safety deposit box and it's gone. So the thief has like already moved the jewel to some secret location. The other thieves can't find it. And now that they've killed the guy, like, they're never going to find it. So it's like, oh, we like the whole story, the fake Sherlock Holmes story is all about like finding this forever lost jewel. So, it ends up being like a story that his stepdad told him when he was a kid to try and like tell him through riddle where this real stolen jewel was, which feels like such a metaphor for all of these episodes. Do you know what I mean? Like, you can't just make it sort of convoluted. You have to go seven layers deep in like the taco dip of convoluted so that like someone has to like, if you like squint your eyes and like look sideways at it, upside down while reciting the Bhagavad Gita, like all of a sudden like the light will come on in your soul and you'll understand like the true meaning of Christmas. Like it's like,
yeah,
it's like, I don't know how mentally ill I have to be to have known to look through the layers that you think I should be looking through to find the thing that you think I should find. Like, it's like, no one's brain works that way. I don't know what you're talking about. But anyways, so we find out about like this story. We figure out who fake Sherlock Holmes is. We know that his real name, like I said, is David Kingsley. And then somehow Murdoch ends up being able to break Kingsley out of this manic episode. And so Kingsley like knows who he is all of a sudden. And I don't remember how it happens. It's like clearly not important. Gare was not on screen. I did not care. But it's kind of funny to me because when he breaks him out and the guy's like, oh yeah, no, I'm not Sherlock Holmes. How long have I been like in this manic episode? My real name is David Kingsley. Like, how long has it been? He has a North American accent because he's supposed to be a guy from Toronto. He's supposed to be Canadian. Right. So God bless this actor from Liverpool because like he tries. He tries really hard to do a Toronto accent.
He really does. But I was like, oh, is he trying for a Canadian accent right now? Is that what's happening?
He didn't succeed. No.
He tried though.
So he tries. And like, I couldn't do a Liverpudlian accent. I know that I can't. Like, I admit that I can't. But like, also people aren't like paying me to try. I did, you know, he tried and it was like a good effort. And then thankfully, Murdoch ends up deciding that it's better for this guy's mental health for him to be in the manic delusion, which I have some questions about, but like, whatever, man. It's 1890, whatever. Maybe it's totally fine to live your life pretending to be Sherlock Holmes and like no one will hurt you or take advantage of you. Maybe that's fine. So So we end up finding out that David's uncle is the one who killed his stepdad for the stolen jewel. And so now David's uncle has been looking for this jewel ever since he killed the guy like 20 years ago and caused the kid to go into full Sherlock Holmes delusion. This is where, so David is so angry about this guy having killed his father, well, his stepdad, that he is going to shoot him. Like, he is full on, like, about to shoot him. And I was like, oh, this is like, this feels like actual, like, emotional stakes and drama. But it's Murdoch Mysteries. We can't have that. So this is where Murdoch is like, what if you become Sherlock Holmes again? And he would never kill a guy. So you just go full into the delusion and it'll solve all of your emotional problems. You just push him down real deep and you go into fantasy land. And the guy's like, that sounds good. Blink, and like just becomes Sherlock Holmes again. And I was like, is that how that works? Is that, yes. You just believe hard enough and your brain switches?
So, yeah. When Garen Agoti tells you something, you listen to Garen Agoti.
Yeah, I get, no, but this was Murdoch.
He comes back later, though, doesn't he? Oh, he tries to find him at the end because he's like, oh, he had really good ideas. And they're like, oh, yeah, he's gone.
Yeah, I need a little bit more help writing my story. Although I will say that, like, did you notice when Murdoch is talking to not Sherlock Holmes and is like, you need to be Sherlock Holmes. You need to be a better man. He has the same mind control echo that Gare does in Forever Night when he's like a vampire doing mind control. They use the same fucking thing. And I was like, I was like, holy shit, is Murdoch a vampire? Like, my maybe. String board.
He's already got guyliner. We're halfway there.
I know. Just taking my strings, put them on the pegboard of destiny.
Yeah, I would watch more of this show if he was.
Okay, here's my hope. We get through 18 seasons. In the season finale, he's like, I'm actually an immortal.
And you're like, fuck yes, I knew it. I fucking knew it.
My string board was all worth it this whole time.
I knew it. Now I got to go back and watch it from the beginning and find all the clues.
They're here just for me. I thought that we were going to get a lot of angry letters for this episode from like science bros and Sherlock Holmes ladies. Now I know that we're going to get really pissed off letters from 65-year-old women who are really into Murdoch mysteries. How dare you ruin this with vampires? How dare you? How dare you speak so terribly?
I would argue vampires don't ruin it. It's fine.
I mean, that's my response to that. But yeah. You know, I've been told I was wrong. Okay. So vampire mind controls the guy until he becomes Sherlock Holmes again. Gare pops up and is like, oh, shit, I was going to milk the guy for more inspiration because I, Sir Arthur Conan Doyle, am just a giant fraud and I just take ideas from what any rando dude in Toronto tells me and that's how I get all my stories. Uh-oh, I guess I got to, like, write my own book. Womp womp. So he shows up again for 35 more seconds. They hand him one beer as payment. They, like, tell him to fuck off back next door. And then we find out, find out from Gare that Gare had shown up at the asylum where Fake Sherlock Holmes, I guess, was placed, and finds out that, like, the guy just, like, checked himself out, which I guess is a thing you can do if you're so mentally ill that you don't know who you are. He just
escaped.
Did he escape? Okay, that makes more sense. I thought he had, like, a day pass.
Earlier, he put his outfit on the skeleton. And so what she says is like the skeleton trick became the vacuum trick or something. Like he put his hat on something else.
Put his clothes on something else and snuck out. Okay. So he sneaks out of the asylum. And then he figures out where the stolen jewel is at the same time that Murdoch figures it out. So like the story that his stepdad told him involved like a boat and a jewel being thrown overboard into the water, and this guy had a little toy boat when he was a kid, and there's like a little creek that he would like float the toy boat at, so they figure out, okay, it's got to be there. So he goes to the little creek behind his house, and somehow like this jewel never floated away. I guess it was so heavy it sunk to the bottom of this tiny little creek and just sat there for 20 years. So Fake Sherlock Holmes digs around in the mud. He finds the special jewel. He gives it to Murdoch, and Murdoch is like, oh, who should I say found it? And the guy's like, Sherlock Holmes, of course. So he's like, I guess the guy's so crazy and it's entirely my fault because I told him with my mind control voice to go deep into his delusion and he did. That's fine. We're not going to worry about that.
How bad did
The fucking end? So I don't... Like, it's not the worst thing. Because again, we've seen Teddy Bear Blowjob. So like, the worst thing we've seen has been pretty awful. So like, this was like... fine.
It felt like we have a Sherlock Holmes episode. We need to bring Gare back. And Gare was like, I'm not growing a mustache and I'm not putting a fake mustache on. And they were like, That's cool.
Yeah, are you in town for like an hour? Do you have like some clothes that fit you? And he's like, yeah, from a different play. And they're like, ah, it's fine.
It's been 6 years. Yeah, it's fine.
Anytime clothing that's like from any time before like 1950. And he's like, I don't know, kind of. And they're like, yeah, it's fine. The audience doesn't care.
Yeah.
I bring my own hat. And they're like, sure, bring your own hat. I'm sure I saw a bemused eyebrow in this because like he must have sitting across from his own character.
Yeah.
But like, and I guess weird facial hair because he has a weird little goatee.
But that's clearly his. I don't know. I'm just going to go dash out of 5. Like, I don't even feel like I could rate it. He literally rolled in.
Yeah.
Like he rolled in for like a corn dog. Like they let him eat at the, he needed lunch. He didn't want to pay for lunch. So they were like, well, if you come and you do a cameo in this episode, you can use the craft services table. And he was like, cool. And he just showed up and did this like 2-minute cameo of like, he's in 2 whole episodes in season 1. And then he must disappear until season 6, where you get a Sherlock Holmes episode, and you're like, damn, I hope Conan Doyle shows up again. And he literally pops up and he's like,
did someone say my name 3 times in front of a mirror?
I'm Sir Arthur Conan Doyle. Which direction is the craft services table? And they're like, over there. And he's like, cool. See you at the end of the episode. And then he just leaves till the end of the episode.
I think I'm going to be honest. I think that's entirely exactly what happened.
He's putting bananas in his straw boater and then trying to fit it on top of his head. They're like, how much food do you have food in your hat? And he's like, no.
No. And like a carrot falls down.
Barbecue sauce is just dripping.
Set dip. And people are like, are you double dipping? And he's like, no. And he's like, cheeks are like chipmunk full of carrots.
I never double dip.
He says that in like the Forever Night voice, like the bum 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 bum.
I never double dip.
I like that. The longer we record these episodes, the more our love is just mean.
It's not mean. It's not mean. It's good natured. Look, are we going to do this serious? No, this is fun. It's fun about like, yeah. It's just a, I'm sorry, but he knows what he did. He knows what he did. And we're just pointing it out. That's all.
We're pointing out that he got paid in like carrots and beer for his last episode.
Barbecue and barbecue sauce.
Oh my God.
It's the vibe.
It is the vibe. It is exactly the vibe. Like they would have, like they didn't even bother to slap on the same mustache.
No.
Like I know that they weren't using that for like anything else. Like no one else had a as wide as your palm size mustache. Like come on. So you gave it a dash out of 5. I guess like I know I rate it out of like overall enjoyability. So out of 10 sloppy wet kisses. I'm going to give it a 2 because I feel like a 1 and a 0 is what I give like Ikwe and Puppets, like where it's like painful to watch and it hurts me and I feel kind of gross. This was like,
it was a fine episode.
He wasn't in it super much, but like when he showed up, he was like, wink to the camera, nod to everybody else, fill my straw boater hat up with baby carrots and corn. All right, like off I go. He's just, you know.
A ham sandwich in his pocket.
Yeah. And I didn't want to put up videos of us, but like your little hand gesture is really funny to me. So I like, it's like fine. I had like a thought and I lost it when you like started making the like dip in my pocket gesture. I had a whole thought about this, but it's like,
I'm sorry. I was pretending.
No, it's fine. It's fine.
In my pocket. I'm a bad friend. He could have gotten paid, but he just showed up for funsies. Come on.
I like the idea that like they weren't expecting him. They're like, okay, so we're going to do an episode about Sherlock Holmes. And he's like, not without me, you can't. And he just like popped up. I'm not mad about it.
Yeah, I like the guy. I like the guy pretending to be Sherlock Holmes. Like I like at the opening when he unties the horse and they don't realize it. Like that's funny. That was good.
Yeah. Like I feel like a 2 is where I'm going to land for like, inoffensive and fine and like I'm not mad about it, and I've had to watch it a couple of times for the episode and like I'm not mad about that either, but like in terms of Does it show off like his immense range of acting skills? Like, no, because he's only in it for 35 seconds. Like, do I think that the show really cared about him being in it? Like, no, on account of they didn't even dress him the fucking same. Like, but it's like fine. Like, I'm not angry about it. And it's like a cute enough show, and he gets to make his I'm in on the joke / this is really weird what's happening right now, but I'm going to get some more tiles on my French chateau face, which is a favorite expression of mine. I really enjoy that one. So yeah. Like, I feel like, okay, so what is your overall rating for like all of, I mean, you've seen 3 episodes out of a 17 year long TV show. What is your overall rating for Murdoch Mysteries in terms of, would you recommend it to people? Did you
enjoy it? Yeah, I thought it was sweet. I thought it was what I wanted him to be in Frankie Drake.
Yes.
Where he got to be in it. He got to do stuff. He got to act. He got to be a character. He got to, and it kind of tapers, like you start big and then you taper off, but it was fine. And I enjoyed the show. I would sit and watch a couple episodes of this a week. Like, I wouldn't binge Murdoch Mysteries, but I might be like, I'll watch one on Monday. I'll make a Murdoch Monday.
Yeah. Yeah. I think it's like, it's cute and it's fun to watch, even though like when we break apart the plots, I feel like I get more confused. And I know it does. So it's like the late 1800s. And I know Frankie Drake is like, I think right before or right after World War One. I think right before. So there is some like some later season of Murdoch that like timeline wise crosses over with when Frankie Drake happens. So I know that there is in fact at least one episode where the characters cross over. Like one episode of Frankie Drake, I think, where it's like some older, like older versions of some characters from Murdoch get to cross over. So like I want to see that. I haven't had a chance to see that yet, but I think that could be kind of cute. But like I like the show much better than Frankie Drake, and I don't really know why, because I don't know, it just feels more like, I like that it's mainly murder of the week and then there's like a little bit of personal stuff, whereas I feel like with Frankie Drake it was like plot A and then plot B and then plot C and there's like a D plot and oh also there's a crime, and I was like, there's too many things, there's too many balls in the air. And like, it would be fine if I cared about all the balls, but I care about like one and a half of the balls, and you've thrown like 6 balls at my face. There's like too many.
Yeah.
So I feel like here it's like murder, even though the murder, they decided to make it like 7 layers of fiesta dip deep, like too much, but like fine, like one murder. So as long as I like wake up halfway through and you're still solving that murder, like I'm still good. And then also like sometimes Garrett Wendivy shows up and gives like a masterclass in acting. And also pisses off Yannick Besson, which I kind of enjoy. Yeah. And then like, poof, like back to the craft services table. So I'm like, all right, this is. So I feel like a lot of the stuff we watched, I wouldn't be like, yes, audience, like definitely like go out and watch this. This is like high quality television. I like Murdoch Mysteries. I would recommend Murdoch Mysteries. It's like, it's fun. Like it's still on. It's 17 seasons. So if you want something like to be able to just put on and like keep watching, like you will get forever through your laundry. Yeah, forever. Yeah. If you have 6 grand to spare, you can go and see the sets, which could be fun. Like, it's just nice. And even though like the second episode had the grossest fucking vomit and teeth I've ever seen, and like that weird blue fucked up contact lens, like it's just like overall, it's just like pleasant and sweet. And then has like a couple of like gut punch emotional moments where you get to see the actors like actually, you know, show their full acting acumen. So I like that it's like okay, you know, you guys have to be goofy and dumb, and then we're gonna give you a couple of moments where you can like put this on your acting reel and show that you can do an actual job, like, so you still get to like use some of your skills, and then the rest of the time just, I don't know, like eat pie and fall down, and they're like, okay, got it,
can do.
It's my time to shine. So yeah, I would say give it a shot. I know it's on Acorn. You said it's on Amazon Prime. I think it's on like a bunch of other stuff. I know if you're in Canada, it's probably on CBC Gem, which I can't get legally in the States, which is a bummer. But like there's like enough ways to watch it that you probably already have a streaming service that will let you do it. So like give Murdoch Mysteries a shot. And also, as we said, Yannick Besson, that's not guyliner. That is just his eyes are all natural, baby. And they're,
I know,
they're real good. They're real nice.
It's the thick, thick eyelashes. These eyelashes are like thick and real close together, and it makes it look like guyliner.
It's real pretty. And I'm
a superior version of guyliner, because he's not even actually wearing guyliner.
All natural. Well, because like a guy that wears guyliner, that's usually a red flag for like other stuff. Like it's usually like there's usually some problems happening.
Sometimes. I do like eyeliner.
I like it as a look.
I'm I just like saying, it at a distance. Yeah.
It's like the straw boater hat. Like, yeah. I like a straw boater hat. I like a bow tie. I like eyeliner. But if you're wearing any or all three of those things, usually there's something bad. Usually there's something bad underneath.
That's fair. Yeah.
Yeah. But like, he's got natural eyeliner. He's got just dim, beautiful eyes. Mm-hmm. So even though you won't like see Gare in every episode, there's still something to look at. There's still something for the ladies.
There's compensation.
Yeah. And like we said, like if you keep watching long enough, Nigel will show up. And, you know, that's good for the soul. Nigel showing up. So anyways, you know, as our new motto goes, if you tell him, just fine, tell him, but just don't fucking tell us, okay?
Yeah, we don't want to know. We want to live in bliss in ignorance.
I can't take the stress.
He'll never know we do this, so.
Until we show up at Stratford with, like, a tote bag of our own merchandise that we, like, inch across the table at him while making unbroken eye contact.
Until next time, friends.
You're saying that like you're not gonna like I'm not gonna have you shanghaied next to me. Like we're gonna be like roped together with physical.
Yes,
we're gonna be lashed to a mat.
No, she ordered all of it. This is her gift to you. I'm like, no, my lips are sewn shut. Help me.
So I really think so you and I will be lashed together like sailors when they're approaching
Like a siren.
A siren, yeah. Like lashed together on like a big mast.
It's the only way forward.
It's the only
Matt,
way.
It's Matt really the only will be way. The mast.
we're on like, we try a different leg and he just like inches forward with his legs. And then he like tosses the tote bag at Gare from a safe distance of like 30 feet away. They got this for you. They can't look at you. They're drooling a little bit right now. They seem a little sick. Can you turn down whatever it is you're doing? Can you? And he's like, no, I can't. This is just how I live. We are like 18 episodes into this podcast. I am no less confused about what happened or how to fix it. I really thought
the charisma.
The charisma, yeah. Mm-hmm. I really, that's what we should do. We should get him a t-shirt that says charisma on it. Oh, I'm gonna add this to the list.
This is where we're leaving. I gotta go. Good night. Good night, friends. Meg, just say bye.
Fine. Bye. Bye.